وعلى أهل بيتي الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين. السلام عليكم brothers and sisters. It's my honor to speak here in front of you. These programs are hosted by the Fatima Islamic Society and by Yasin, and it's my honor to be invited by them and to be in front of you. Inshallah, let's start the speech by reciting three loud salawats for the return of Imam Zaman,
inshallah.
Now, over the last few nights, I've been speaking about the reasons behind Ashura, the reasons why Imam Hussein alayhi salam decided to stand up and sacrifice himself. What was so important that Imam Hussein deemed it necessary to give his own life? Now, in the first night, we talked about reforming the Ummah. In the second night, we talked about Amr bin Ma'ruf wa Nahy an al-Munkar. Yesterday, we spoke about reviving the Sunnah. Today's topic is supporting truth and opposing falsehood. One of the reasons why Imam Hussein stood up, one of the reasons why Imam Hussein took to the sword and fought, was to support the truth and oppose falsehood. Now we know when Imam Hussein alayhi salam was on his way towards Karbala, after he left Mecca and he was in the desert, he was stopped at Karbala. The person who stopped him was poor Riyadi, who we mentioned earlier. He repented and he became a shaheed fighting for Imam Hussein. But at that time, he's the one who stopped the army. When he stopped the army, Imam Hussein addressed the people. He turned towards the people and he said a few statements. One of the statements is important, because one of the statements kind of answers why he's there, what he's doing, and addresses the people at showing them that they're doing something wrong. He says this, Allah tarana an al-haq la ya'mal bih wa an al-batil la yatanahi an. Don't you know that truth is not being acted upon, and falsehood and batil has saturated the society? And he continues, he says, "In a believer must be prepared to meet his Lord in these conditions. If these conditions are presented, a believer, a mu'min, must be prepared to meet his Lord. That means he must be prepared to give his life. He must be prepared to die. When truth or haq is not being acted in accordance to, and batil has saturated this society, is everywhere." Salawat ala Muhammad wa ala
Muhammad.
Now, I remember, or if you remember, a few nights ago, when I discussed one of the topics, I said that always when we come across Islamic topics, when we come across different concepts, different issues, we should always look and see what the Quran says. It's very important. Everything that we take, every Islamic ideology we have, should stem from the Quran. Now, unfortunately, we don't use the Quran as we should. We don't read it as much as we should. And usually when we read it, we're just reading it in Arabic and going right through it and not looking at its meaning. We don't sit and we don't think about what the Quran is. We don't read the translation as much as we should. We don't try to find out what Allah is trying to tell us. Now, this stems from a movement that happened a long time ago. There was a movement called Akhbariism. And this movement, basically what they said is that mankind is unable to understand the Quran. That the Quran is written in such a way that mankind cannot understand even the most simple words that are mentioned in the Quran. And this is actually an ideology that the majority of Shia scholars held at one point in history, before Wahid Behbahani came and basically destroyed it. But from that point until now, the Quran has not been given as much importance as it should be. And we, being Muslims, being Shias, we need to change that. We need to look and we need to see what the Quran tells us. So the story of truth and falsehood, of good and evil, good and bad, this is a universal story. This is a story that's mentioned in all societies, in all religions, and especially in the Quran. Now, the Quran is a book of guidance. The Quran is meant to guide mankind, to show mankind what he has to do to get closer to Allah. So there's nothing in the Quran that is not important. Everything that Allah mentions in the Quran, every way he mentions it, is something to guide us. He doesn't tell stories just to entertain us. He doesn't tell stories just to please us. Everything that's in the Quran has a purpose. Now, when things are repeated in the Quran, that makes it even more important. Because Allah is telling us something over and over again, so that it stays in our mind, so that through repetition, we keep it in the front of our minds and we always try to implement it. Now, the story of truth and falsehood is such. It's very important because of the repetition. But in some verses of the Quran, Allah describes to us what truth and falsehood are, how we should look at it. Not through a story, but through a description. And I'm going to read one of these verses in English for you. And then we'll talk a little bit about it, and then we'll move on to the second verse. With the loud salawat ala Muhammad wa alayhi
wa sallam.
In the 13th chapter, the 17th verse, Allah states, and I'm going to read the English translation. It's a parable. He's giving us an example of what truth is and what falsehood is. He says, he sends down water from the sky, whereat the valleys are flooded to their capacity. And the flood carries along a swelling scum. So what happened? The clouds gather rain into a valley. The valley floods. Now when the flood moves, you see, I'm sure you've seen pictures of the flood in Pakistan. There was recently pictures of floods throughout the world. There's always, you know, filth, there's dirt that remains, that goes along with the flood. So Allah is bringing this to our minds. He wants us to picture this. Picture a flood and picture the filth that accompanies it. Then he goes on to give a second example. He says, and from what this smelt in the fire for the purpose of making ornaments or wares, there arises a similar scum. Now this kind of sounds weird, but what that means, basically what he's talking about is the metal. When you shape metal, when you work with metal, you burn it and you melt the metal to put it into certain shapes, ornaments, wares, or whatever. When you do that, a similar type of scum is created as well. So in these two examples, he's showing us that, you know, there's an event that takes place, something takes place, and scum is left behind. Then Allah continues. He says, this is how Allah compares truth to falsehood. This is how Allah compares truth to falsehood. He continues. As for the scum, it leaves as dross. Dross is something that's unimportant, insignificant. So the scum that's left after the flood, it evaporates, it goes away. It becomes insignificant, worthless, it goes away. The scum that is originated when you melt metal and you work with metal, that also disappears, it goes away. This filth, this nastiness, this pollution, goes away by itself. But what remains? And that which profits the people remains on earth. So and when the flood finishes, the earth becomes fertile. That which profits mankind is this fertile earth. That scum and pollution has disappeared. With the metal, that which remains is this ornament, this tool that we can use, something that benefits mankind. and the dirt, the pollution, the scum that was created from it disappeared. That is how Allah draws comparison. So hear what is Allah saying in this verse. He's saying basically he's giving us characteristics of falsehood and characteristics of truth. The characteristics of falsehood is it's polluted, dirty, short-lived, temporal. What are the characteristics of truth? Truth is pure, clean, eternal. It lasts forever. It's beautiful. And this is what Allah is telling us. He's using two descriptions to tell us this. That falsehood is something that's short-lived and will go away. But truth is something beautiful and pure. It remains forever. Salawat ala Muhammad wa Now there's many types of truth and many types of falsehood. What is the most important truth in the universe? Is it that we are in existence? Is it that heaven and hell exist? We're going to be tested in this life and we're going to be raised in the next? What is the most important truth? The Quran answers this as well. Everything is in the Quran. The Quran says, ذَلَكَ بَأَنَّ اللَّهُ وَالْحَقِّ Allah is the truth. وَأَنَّمَا يَدْعُونَ مِن دُونَهِ هُوَ الْبَاطِلُ And that which you call upon besides Him is falsehood. وَاللَّهُ عَلِيُّ الْكَبِيرُ وَاللَّهُ عَلِيُّ الْكَبِيرُ And Allah is the high, the kabir, the grand, the great. Now, first of all, as I said in my previous speeches, when we come across verses where two attributes are given at the end of the verse, we should always try to think what relationship these attributes have with the verse that was read. So here, after the phrase that says, and that which you call upon besides Allah is batil, is falsehood. Allah says, and Allah is the high and the great. So you can see the relationship there. That Allah is higher and greater than anything you call upon. But it's good to always ponder upon that. Pondering upon these two attributes will help you to understand the Quran. Now here, what's being said is Allah is the most important truth. The closer that we come to Allah, the more truth we will become. Now, there's a philosophical explanation of that, where it says truth or perfection is existence. And the purer or the stronger or the more severe your existence is, the better you are, the more perfect you are, the more truth, or the closer to truth you are. Absolute truth is Allah. The closer we become to Him, the closer we become to this attribute, it's saying the stronger our existence becomes. Now, I don't want to get into that too much, that might be a little too difficult for the crowd, but I just wanted to mention it so you have something to think about, something to ponder about. Now, what does that mean? That means Allah is the one who gives truth or gives validity, gives perfection to things. The Quran is truth because it's from Allah. The Prophet is truth because Allah sent him. Imam Hussein alayhi salam is truth because Allah appointed him. The Islamic government, for instance, is truth because Allah ordained it. Whatever is truth because it stems from Allah. The human beings, we have free will. We're able to decide to obey Allah's commandments or disobey. We can decide to be righteous people or evil people. We can decide to get closer to Allah or run away from Allah. If we use our choices correctly, if we If we decide to obey Allah, and we decide to move closer to Him, to gain proximity with Him, then we will be moving closer to truth. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ala
Muhammad.
Now I want to mention another verse of the Quran, a second verse of the Quran, again about truth and falsehood. This verse is a very important verse. I'll explain to you, it's a very popular verse, and I'll explain to you why it's popular in a minute. But first, there's a story behind the verse which I want to explain to you. There's a circumstance of revelation, Shan and Nuzul. Now, we know that the Prophet, he migrated from Mecca to Medina. He was persecuted in Mecca. The people were giving him and all the Muslims a very difficult time. They even killed some of the Muslims. Islam was not able to flourish in that society. So the Prophet was ordered by Allah to migrate to Medina. When he went to Medina, he set up an Islamic government. And he started to fight wars. He fought defensive and offensive wars. And eventually, he was able to conquer Mecca. It's really amazing that he conquered Mecca without bloodshed. This is something that's very interesting. That he was able to conquer one of the greatest cities of that, well, probably the greatest city of that area, without any bloodshed. But when he conquered that city, what did he do? First thing he did is he went straight to the Kaaba, straight to the house of Allah. And in the Kaaba, there were 360 idols. What did he do with the idols? We know he destroyed them. This is something you probably learned in Sunday school. He went into the Kaaba and he destroyed all of the idols. These idols were made of all kinds of different things. There were wooden idols, there were stone, made from stone, from metal, made from food, some were made from dates. There were all kinds of idols. The Prophet came and destroyed them all. Then a verse of the Quran was revealed. Allah said at this point, He said, وَقُولْ جَاءَ الْحَقِّ وَزَهَقَ الْبَاطِلُ وَالْبَاطِلُ كَانَ زَهُوكًا. Say that the truth has appeared and falsehood has vanished. Verily, falsehood is bound to vanish. The truth being Prophet Muhammad, He's come, falsehood vanished. The idols were destroyed. Now this brings a very important point about truth and falsehood. Whenever there is truth, falsehood in and of itself vanishes. Falsehood cannot exist when truth is there. The only time that batil or falsehood is able to come into existence is if someone turns away and moves away from the truth. This is an important point which we'll need to go over in a little bit. Now, why I mentioned that this verse is a popular verse. This verse in Iran is very popular. It's recited all the time. You always hear this verse. And they compare their revolution to this verse. Why? Now, we know if we look into history, I've been saying almost in every speech, I've been saying that there's important things we need to study. In one speech I said that Najul Balagha is very important. We need to study this book. In another speech I said studying Islamic laws, learning what's halal and what's haram. This is very important and we must learn. Another speech I said we have to learn the Quran. Today I'm going to tell you we have to learn about the revolution that took place in Iran. Because it's a revolution that we can take many lessons from. Now one of the lessons is this. We know that before Imam Khomeini was victorious, before the revolution, the Shah was very powerful. The Shah is the king of Iran. He was very powerful. He was America's ally in the Middle East. Iran had the strongest army in the Middle East at that time. No one could mess with Iran. Now, it seemed impossible for this to change. When a country is so strong, it seems impossible for someone to come from within the country and turn it around, to take the Shah out of power. But this is what happened. Imam Khomeini came. Imam Khomeini was able to bring Islam into the people's hearts, to bring the love of the Ahlul Bayt into the people's hearts, and to bring the love of Imam Hussein alayhi salam into the people's hearts. When he did that, the revolution was successful. Now, one thing that ties this story in with Imam Hussein is that a lot of the progression that was made in this revolution happened in the days of Muharram. The first time that Imam Khomeini openly spoke out against the Shah was in a speech just like this, in a speech that was delivered on one of the nights of Muharram. Why? Because Imam Hussein stood up for justice. He fought against oppression. He's the founder of Islamic movement. And whenever you're speaking about that, you're able to change hearts, you're able to mobilize people, you're able to put people in line to see what's important. And Shahadat, martyrdom, this is very powerful. Now I want to divert a little bit, and I'm going to show you how Shahadat, or being killed for a cause, is important outside of Islamic countries, in non-Islamic countries. This is something that's deemed very positive and very good. Now, I'm sure a lot of the young people, at least, have seen a movie called Braveheart. This was a movie that came out a few years ago. It's a movie that a lot of people watched. It's about a man named William Wallace. This person was a Scottish person who fought for the independence of Scotland. He made a lot of progression, he helped a lot, but in the end he was captured by England and executed. So he died for the cause. He was captured and executed. Salawat ala Muhammad wa Allah. Now, why am I mentioning? What I wanted to say is that because he did this, you could see change in his society. A few years back, I went to Scotland, and I gave some speeches in Muharram in Scotland. In the speeches that I would give, a few priests would attend the lectures, some Christian scholars. And because they came to my lectures, I decided on Sunday to go to church to return the favor. When I went to church in Scotland, the Church of Scotland, it's called. It's a branch of Christianity called the Church of Scotland. The first thing that this person said was, remember in the movie Braveheart when William Wallace did this and did that. That's all they talked about is William Wallace. Because he gave his life fighting for independence, the people love him centuries after, hundreds of years later. Not centuries, but hundreds of years. Now, also there's these Muharram processions. In Scotland they have them, in England, America, even in I think tomorrow there's going to be one in the Los Angeles. Now these Julus, as they're called. I went to the one in Scotland. Everybody was marching, hitting themselves, doing matam, yelling chants in Urdu and Arabic, and none of the Scottish people knew what was happening. They had the horse, they had everything. But the thing is, the people that they were speaking to did not understand them. The Scottish people had no idea what's going on. And just as a suggestion, when we have the Julus, we shouldn't be doing it for ourselves. We should be doing it for the people who are watching. So it's good if we do at least something in the language that the people could understand. Just a suggestion. But what I was doing in this Julus is I would stay on the sidelines and I walked amongst the Scottish people and I tried to answer their questions. When they would say, what's going on, what's happening, I would tell them the story of Imam Hussein and let them know. So one woman asked me, what is this? What's this horse? Why are they hitting themselves? What's going on? And I told her the story your mom was saying, that it's the, you know, we're commemorating the death of the grandson of the prophet who was such a good person and stood up to injustice and this and that. And she paused. She thought for a moment and she said, oh, you mean like William Wallace fought for independence? And you could see that this person was just fighting for a cause. William Wallace just fought, he fought for independence, not for religion, not for Allah, but he had such an effect on the people. Now when we think about Imam Hussein alayhi salam, perfection, he's infallible, he's the most perfect person on the earth at that time, he's ordained by Allah, he's fighting for truth, imagine the effect that people, that this would have. And Imam Khomeini in the revolution, he used that. He used Ashura, he used the line of Imam Hussein alayhi salam to further the revolution, to make the revolution victorious. And that's what happened. That's why it's important to have these speeches. Someone asked the other night, why do we have these speeches over and over again, throughout Muharram, every year, repetition. Why? So we could keep this in our hearts alive. We could keep the spirit of Imam Hussein alayhi salam in our hearts forever. Salawat ala Muhammad wa Muhammad. Now back to the original hadith that I mentioned from Imam Hussein alayhi salam. The hadith said that truth is not acted upon, and falsehood has saturated the society. He's explaining the conditions that he's in. And he's also saying when such conditions are prevalent, when such conditions exist, that one, a believer, must prepare to face his Lord, must prepare to give his life. So that means the society that he was in was a society that was full of batil, full of falsehood. Now, there's many examples. I want to go over a little bit of the historical circumstances and compare them with today. There's many examples of how this society was full of falsehood, was saturated with falsehood. One of them was this. That's Muawiyah. I'm going to talk a little bit about actually before Yazid. Two instances before Yazid, with Yazid's father, and then moved to Yazid. Muawiyah, in the time of Imam Ali alayhi salam, when Imam Ali was the Khalif, he decided that what he wants to do is he wants to take over the Islamic government. And he thought about it, he planned how he could do it, and he implemented his strategy. And in the end, he was successful. Now, one of the things he did was he would send groups, he would dispatch small, very small armies, and he would attack the outskirts of the Islamic government. Small villages. Small, insignificant villages that didn't have any power. But he would attack them one by one. He would steal the property of the people in the village, he would kill the men. What he was trying to create fear. Trying to create insecurity in the Islamic government. And through this insecurity, people will turn towards Imam Ali and say that you're not able to give us security, we need someone who can. You're not able to make us feel safe, we need someone who can. So he wanted to make the people turn against Imam Ali alayhi salam through this, through causing fear. Now, if we look at America today, America is doing the same thing. Through the media is causing fear amongst the people all the time. We see that, you know, this threat level keeps going from orange to red to yellow, keeps going up and down. What is that? Why? So the people will be scared. They want to control us through fear. But this is a mistake. This is one of their biggest mistakes. Because when the citizens of the country feel too much fear or too scared, they will eventually turn against the country, turn against the government. So in this one instance, America is making a huge mistake by trying to make people scared of it, trying to create this sense of fear throughout the society. But this is what Muawiyah did, and Muawiyah was successful. Another thing that Muawiyah did is he used the public treasury to buy off those who were close to Imam Ali alayhi salam. There are many people close to Imam Ali. Some people were strong, had strong faith. Some people had weak faith. Those who had weak faith, Muawiyah was able to buy them. To buy them and to use them against Imam Ali. And Muawiyah fought against Imam Ali alayhi salam. Muawiyah was able to also gain control of the Islamic government after Imam Ali's death. Now, what is a bigger battle? What is a bigger falsehood than fighting against the Islamic government, the rightful Islamic government? Even the other school of thought, our Sunni brothers, they say that if somebody intentionally stands up and fights against the Khalifat, fights against the Khalif, he is a kafir. He has left the folds of Islam. What did Muawiyah do? Did Muawiyah not stand up and fight against Imam Ali alayhi salam? Was Imam Ali not the righteous Khalifa, not in our opinion, in their opinion at that time? The fourth Khalifa Rashidun, as they say? He was, and Muawiyah fought against him. Now, they'll say that yes, it's because he had ijtihad. He was using his ijtihad to fight against the Islamic government. But that's a weak excuse. So this is why some people were asking, you know, is it okay to speak out against certain figures in history? And the answer is not everyone. But Muawiyah for sure. Because there is no way that someone should be able to say that someone should be able to defend Muawiyah. Now after Muawiyah, when Muawiyah was passing away, he did something else which was probably worse than anything that he's done in his whole life. He appointed his son, Yazid, as the next Islamic ruler. Now, as I've mentioned in question and answer sessions and throughout the last few days, there's a huge difference between Muawiyah and Yazid. May Allah curse both of them. There's a huge difference. Muawiyah presented himself as a Muslim. He did not commit open sins. He performed prayer amongst the people. But Yazid was known for being irreligious. He was known for being a drunk. He would drink in front of everybody. He was known for gambling in front of the people. He was known for committing adultery, for murder, for being a terrible sinner. I mentioned a few days ago that even there was a group, after he became the Khalif, there was a group of people who came to meet him. They wanted to meet the new Islamic leader. They wanted to see how he is. They came from faraway lands. And when they returned to their people asked them, you know, did you meet Yazid ibn Muawiyah ibn Abu Sufyan? Did you meet him? How was he? And they said, he's a drunk. He gambles. He commits adultery with mothers and their daughters. He does not pray. This is the Islamic leader. Is there anything that can be worse than this? Is there anything? In a hadith, Imam Ali alayhi salam says that the people follow their leaders. If this is your leader, someone who is so corrupt, someone who does not care about Islam at all, if this is your leader, what's going to happen to your society? So Imam Hussein alayhi salam was forced to stand up. He had to protect Islam. He had to stand up to support the truth and to oppose this falsehood that presented itself in all of these conditions and even more. Salawat ala Muhammad wa Muhammad. Now what is our responsibility? I said before and I'll say again, these speeches are not meant to be theoretical speeches. I want them to be practical. I want you to come away, to leave this room, after these 10 days and after every night, and have something in your mind that you could do. Some way that you could implement what I've said in your daily lives, in your communities. I do not want it to be merely theoretical for you to, you know, wrestle with it in your mind and think about it and forget it 2 months later. I want it to be something that you could act upon. So how can we act upon what I'm saying? We have to stand up for the truth in our own lives. We have to oppose falsehood in our own lives. Now,